Southern Sudan is preparing to vote on its future. It's deciding next month whether to split from the north. The referendum is part of a peace agreement that ended a brutal civil war 5 years ago. Now, the south of Sudan is already semi-autonomous. It's widely expected that the south will opt for full independence. If that happens, and if everyone accepts the results, Africa will have a new country. The World's Alex Galifian takes a look.
Ezekiel Lolgatkwoth heads the government of Southern Sudan's mission to the United States. He says his people are already preparing for an independent future.
We have capable Southern Sudanese who are working day and night to make sure that we are ready to go on the 9th of July, 2011.
July 9th, 2011. That's when the new country would become official, after a transitional period, and if the referendum goes that way. But Southern Sudan isn't waiting. It's already got its own flag, and while it hasn't yet decided on a new name, it's selecting a national anthem.
And sing a song of freedom with joy.
This is one of the candidates.
For peace, liberty and justice shall forevermore.
The competition is still going on, but we have actually shortlisted some of the people who are actually good in composing it.
Flags and national anthems are relatively easy to come by. Actually operating as a new country, that's more complicated. Now, Southern Sudan has a bit of a head start. The 2005 peace agreement established an interim constitution, so there's already a functional government and a legal system. But observers say Southern Sudanese have high expectations for independence. They'll want life to get better, and quickly.
There's tremendous goodwill on the part of the people of Southern Sudan. They feel that the people who are in the government have been their advocates for all those years, and they will tolerate a little bit of disappointment, but not a lot.
Susan Purdin lives and works in Southern Sudan. She's the country director there for the International Rescue Committee.
Most folks expect their government to provide health care, to provide schools, and in Southern Sudan that's not happening yet.
Meaning that the government there would have to rely on outside help for a good while yet.
You know, there is a huge problem of capacity, of skilled and experienced people who can provide the backbone of a state machinery.
Michael Bleeby writes for Business Day, a newspaper based in South Africa. He points out that the people who are now running the Southern Sudanese government aren't bureaucrats. They're members of a former liberation army.
Fighting a bush war for the best part of 40 years teaches you to fight. It doesn't teach you how to govern. It doesn't teach you how to build schools. It doesn't teach you how to lay pipes and to wire up electricity.
After the 2005 peace deal, there was hope that educated Southern Sudanese who'd gone abroad would return home to help, says Susan Purdin.
And people did come back and try, but it was too difficult. They could not live there because it was so different from what they had become accustomed to as professionals in other countries or parts of the world.
Hardly surprising. Schools and colleges in Southern Sudan today are more or less starting from scratch.
There hasn't been an opportunity for education for generations.
One way to develop opportunities, and relatively quickly, is through foreign investment. But that's another challenge. Reporter Michael Bleeby recently met a Ugandan businessman in Southern Sudan. He told Bleeby that operating there was incredibly difficult.
He was saying, we have American companies that refuse to pay us into a South Sudanese bank account because they believe there are American sanctions prevent them from doing so. Now, that's not actually the case.
Indeed, U.S. sanctions against Sudan don't apply to Southern Sudan. But as Bleeby argues, it's a matter of perception. If it's going to flourish, Southern Sudan will have to prove itself viable to the outside world. For the past 5 years, says diplomat Ezekiel Lolgatkwoth, that's exactly what the government of Southern Sudan has been trying to do, even ahead of possible independence.
We have more than 18 missions worldwide, and U.S. is one of them. We have been having excellent relations with the world.
Most pressing would be Southern Sudan's relations with its neighbor to the north, its former enemy. Many issues surrounding border security and the control of energy resources, namely oil, are still being worked through. But even if all the practical challenges were met, that probably wouldn't do everything necessary for the building of this new country. Southern Sudan needs time to heal. Again, Susan Purdin with the International Rescue Committee.
How do you go from having been a family that survived a war to being a family that is a participant in a community? What if next week there's a war? What if next week there's no food in the market. What does that mean for how you live your life?
If all goes as expected, come January, the government of southern Sudan is going to be under a great deal of pressure. Purdin says there's no way it can deliver on all fronts. But if it can provide some measure of stability and avoid a return to conflict, that'll be a major achievement. For The World, I'm Alex Galifianakis.